Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with West Point grad, former infantryman, and Dr. John Hughes about his book. Then Quentin Roberts will review last weekend's Service Academy football games. General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. And, of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to introduce a fellow West Pointer, a fellow combat infantryman, and a doctor and an author. John Hughes has done a lot in life, and he just published an incredible book, American Doctor Coming Home to War. Welcome, John.
Hi, thank you very much, Denny. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Hey, John, tell us, why did you decide to go to West Point? Was that a family thing or something you wanted to do or just happened? How did it happen?
It was more or less a combination of factors. I grew up in a family who has a long history of military service to our country. And so it was kind of a natural thing to want to serve. And then going to West Point was also kind of a natural thing. My father went there and my grandfather went there as well.
Okay. We're opposites. I'm the first person in my direct line of my family to ever wear a military uniform. So we're not exactly alike then, I guess. Okay. You were an infantryman when you graduated. How long did you serve as an infantryman and what were some of the things you did?
Well, I served for 2 years in the infantry branch. So when I went to West Point, I didn't initially want to be a doctor. I wanted to be an infantryman. I wanted to be a warrior like my father before me, my grandfather who jumped in the Normandy with the 82nd Airborne Division. It was just the warrior ethos that inspired me to go there in the first place. But about halfway through, I developed an interest in medicine. My father was a doctor as well. And so, of course, I was a little interested in that. And then towards the end, an interesting opportunity arose. I applied to several medical schools and I got in. And the one I wanted to go to was the Military Medical School USU's in Washington, D.C. And they offered me a 2-year deferment. And the deferment allowed me to branch anything I wanted to as long as that branch released me after 2 years. So at that point, it was a no-brainer. So I branched infantry, chose, of course, the 82nd Airborne Division in the mid-90s. That was the place to be to go somewhere in the world and do something on the world event stage. And then I was able to go to airborne school, air assault school, ranger school. And then I was blessed with being a rifle platoon leader deployed to Haiti for 3 months.
Okay. Then the Army sent you to medical school and you became a medical doctor. And it's in that capacity that you deployed and did your other stuff?
Correct. So after resigning from the infantry branch, and actually I had to resign my regular Army commission as well, and I became a reservist, and I was a lieutenant for 6 years, interestingly. Anyhow, some of us just aren't as fast. But anyway, after I graduated, 3 years after that, to do my specialty in emergency medicine. And then from there, I was sent to my first operational unit. I had kind of a complicated course because I married a graduate of the Air Force Academy who was also in the healthcare field. We met at medical school. And it's increasingly difficult to be stationed in the same place. And so one of the cards I would use was operational medicine. Most doctors didn't want to go to war at the height of the Iraq War. And so coming out of there, my wife was able to get a job near the Air Force Academy at one of the local Air Force bases. And 4th Infantry Division had a brigade out there that was slated to go to Iraq as soon as I got there. And so I volunteered for it. And that was my first appointment.
Okay. How long did you stay in the Army? Or are you still in?
When you add up my complete time from my infantry time and then the medical time, it was about 15 years. When I was at medical school, there was a slight break. So I got out at about 15 years.
Okay. You're out of the service now. You have not retired. You're in private practice. But you've written a book, quite an amazing book. I mean, A Doctor Coming Home to War. Talk to us about your book. Take us there.
Well, the book, Denny, was the genesis of a lot of frustrations I had had over the years. When I deployed, even in late 05, 06, it was apparent to me that what was being briefed about the war was not the reality on the ground. And I'm by far the first person to point that out. But I kept a diary. I kept a diary then. And then when I went to Afghanistan for multiple tours over there about what the generals and the politicians were saying about how great the war was and how great the indigenous countries' military forces were and the harsh reality of what was actually going on the ground, especially in Iraq, where you had the sectarian of violence. And that was a term that we were not allowed to use when I was over there, even though as a doctor, as I said, you can't hide the bodies. And I was treating folks who were blatant victims of such violence. And so it began to weigh on me. And in about 2013, I was on my last tour over in Afghanistan. And it began to become untenable at that point to stay on active duty because I knew at a certain point I was going to have to support the party line for what was going on over there, and I just couldn't do that. And at about the same time, my wife was able to secure an early retirement, and I have a special needs son, and so TRICARE is great. We're blessed in that sense. So I was essentially working for a pension, and the business world in emergency medicine was going quite well, so I figured it was a good time to exit stage left. And when I left, I put the military behind me. I wanted a clean start. I wanted to spend time with my family. I'd already spent almost 3 years deployed in the war. I figured I'd done my part and I wanted to do something new. But unfortunately, about a year or two into my new vocation, it became apparent that I couldn't escape a lot of the frustrations that I was having overseas. They were just manifesting in different ways. And I talk about in the book, I was a huge NBA fan. I'm a Go Spurs, I'm a Texas. But in 2019, some events happened with Hong Kong and a lot of the Chinese interventions over there. And I saw how the NBA chose money over ethics and patriotism. And I couldn't do that anymore. And I've never gone to a game since. And I canceled my season tickets. And that hurt. I have Spurs. I'm a paraphernalia, autographed jerseys all over my house. And that hurt. And my son's school was another flashpoint where he went to admittedly a liberal school. But I was under the impression that educators in America, and of course, I was naive at the time, could be as professional as military personnel and medical personnel, where you can vote left, you can vote right, but when you come to work, you do the right thing apolitically. And that was not the case. And I ended up having to withdraw my son from school when it became apparent he was being bullied by bots who were in his chat rooms for academic projects at school during the 2020 election campaign. And it was just completely inappropriate what was actually going on. And so from there, we placed him in a parochial school and he did fine. And I just kind of marched on. But then other things began to happen. COVID hit. We began to see this censorship that was blatant coming down from there. And as a doctor on the front lines in the ER, I was once again seeing the dichotomy from what the narrative was saying about COVID and how things were actually going and the harsh reality of what actually was going on the front lines. But the real call to action to me actually circled back to West Point. Because through all this, I just kept mental notes of what was actually going on. But in August of 2021, as we all know, Kabul fell. 3 months after that, I went to my 25th reunion at West Point. And when I was there, as most old grads know, you have the time where you have a memorial for your fallen colleagues. And then you have a time where you have the ranking grads, if there are any still on active duty, give a state of the Army. And so I was fortunate. One of my classmates is the actual dean up there right now, Brigadier General Shane Reeves. He spoke at that. And then also Scotty Nauman, who's now a 2-star, and I'm sure he's going to be a 4-star general someday, high flyer. But both of them, just 3 months after the war, were painting this picture of how great the Army was. They were also talking about censorship without using that word and saying not to believe what we hear in the news. We all weren't in the know, all the clear picture of what actually happened there. And I had to make a stand at that point. And it drew some catcalls on the one hand, and it also drew a lot of support on the other hand from my classmates. But I called them both on that, and I asked for some clarification for how we just had one of the most embarrassing losses in our country's military history, and they can stand there and say everything is fine. And the dean at West Point said there was nothing to be learned from this war. And my head just spun. And so I went home from that. I began to write a few articles under a fake name at first because I was afraid as a doctor, actually, of the professional implications of speaking out against what the narrative was. And then I began to get emboldened and use my own name. And then about a year and a half ago, the idea just came into my head, I need to catalog this.
Okay. And that's what led to your book, I'm sure.
Correct.
John, we're out of time. I wish we could keep going. How can listeners buy a copy of American Doctor Coming Home to War?
They can go to Amazon. It's in paper book form and it's in Kindle format as well. And about 10% of the net proceeds of the book are going to go towards the families for deceased veterans of Afghanistan.
Great. And you are the chair of the MacArthur Society, a group of West Point grads who'd like to see a return to our prior values. So I hope you'll be back with us next week to talk about the MacArthur Society. Thanks for joining us today, bro.
But thank you very much, Danny.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Quentin Roberts will present Service Academy football. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to do some deep knee bends. Go halfway down. Each time, do 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
Veterans swore an oath to defend this country, and that oath doesn't expire when we take off the uniform.
Concerned Veterans for America provides veterans and military families the opportunity to continue serving their country by taking on the most important issues our country is facing.
A better foreign policy, quality health care for veterans, responsible spending, and more.
Learn more about how you can play a part by visiting cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. And it is Service Academy football time. I'm joined, of course, by our football co-host, Air Force vet Quentin Roberts. Welcome, brother. It's been a whole week since we talked.
It certainly has, Denny. And I tell you what, it's just great to keep on talking about college football and Service Academy football in particular.
You know, if you're going to watch football, I'd just soon watch college football. And within that, Service Academy football.
No doubt, Denny. You know, we understand what it's about. We understand who these students are. And it just always makes a difference when we know that at least 99% of them are going to go on into service for our country. And I think that matters. That's meaningful. But you can still have a good football team and have a great college football experience in the process. And that's what I love, too. Who says you can't have it all? Because I think these student athletes certainly do.
Well, if anybody can, they're certainly leading the pack. Not everybody gets it, but they do. Okay. Well, we're going to start with my favorite team, Army, because they won last week. They beat Holy Cross.
They certainly did, Denny. They actually really are playing good football. Coming off a big victory against Air Force, the question was, can they keep it up or will they have a letdown? But it was the Army West Point Black Knights who moving to 4-6 on the season as they defeated the Holy Cross Crusaders 17-14 on Veterans Day at Mikey Stadium. Army was propelled by a blocked punt returned for a touchdown by freshman linebacker Elo Modozi and a touchdown run by running back Tyrell Robinson and a defense that forced two turnovers to get past Holy Cross and win back-to-back games. You know, there was a part of the season where they had a five-game losing streak, but now they have a two-game winning streak. On the opening drive of the game, Army linebacker Leo Lowen picked up from his big game versus Air Force a week ago, sacking Holy Cross's quarterback Matthew Slucker on third down for a loss of 7 to force a punt. And it was on that punt attempt that Army sophomore defensive back Jabril Williams blocked the punt and recovered for a touchdown by freshman linebacker Elo Modozi. Army jumped out to a 7-0 lead and really did not look back. Their defense was stellar as they had more and more sacks. Quindrellen Hammonds sacked Slucker on a fourth down in the second quarter. And the defense just played lights out. They really did. And that's what made the difference. Tyrell Robinson had 9 carries for 45 yards. Kanye Udo, 9 carries for 36. Markel Johnson, 2 for 21. Leo Lowen had a team-high 12 tackles and 2 sacks and a forced fumble to lead the defense. They really have a lot to play for. If they get to become 6-6 on the season, they will be bowl eligible.
Amen. Navy did pretty good too, didn't they?
They did, Denny. Also on Veterans Day, it was senior quarterback Xavier Arline, who rushed for a career high tying 109 yards and a touchdown and completed 7 of 10 passes, 94 yards and a touchdown as the midshipman moved to 4-5 on the season as they defeated the University of Alabama Birmingham Tigers 31-6 in front of 29,000 fans at Navy Marine Corps Stadium. Coach Brian Newberry said, "I'm just super proud of our football team right now, coming off 2 losses, one really difficult one to Air Force, and then an uncharacteristic loss to Temple. It shows the character of our football team, the way they responded." Danny, let me tell you about Navy. They have, again, I'm going to point out the theme of this week's games is really the quarterback play. Army settling on Bryson Daly, who's now healthy and able to propel them to a victory. Navy settling on Xavier Arline, because remember, they've gone through a couple of different quarterbacks as well, and propelling them to victory. Because the defenses have been good all year. And oh my goodness, Denny, this is so exciting, because guess what happened soon? They're on a collision course, the Army-Navy game. We can't wait to see it.
Amen. Air Force didn't do so well, though, did they?
Denny, it was a late-night game in Honolulu, Hawaii, as the Falcons were defeated 27-13 by the Rainbows of Hawaii. Hawaii took an early lead and just held on. Hawaii's only 4-7 on the season, now 1-4 in the Mountain West. But, boy, did they just hit Air Force in the mouth. And Air Force still is reeling from their unsteady from the loss they suffered at Army. The Rainbow Warriors, after getting a 7-0 lead, Air Force was able to put together a 20-play, 61-yard drive that consumed 11 minutes and 49 seconds off the clock. But it only ended in a field goal. Hawaii, on the other hand, responded with a 9-play, 75-yard drive in the final 3 minutes of the first half and scored a touchdown. Air Force has dropped to 8-2 on the season, 5-1 in the conference. So Air Force is on a two-game losing streak now. Interestingly, Zach Larrier, let's go to that quarterback play. Zach Larrier did not play. They had to go to Jensen Jones, the backup. They even went to their third-string backup. And it's just been tough sledding for Air Force since Larrier has not looked himself since just before the Army game when he was injured with a lower leg injury. So Air Force is struggling, but Army and Navy are hitting their stride.
And Coast Guard versus Merchant Marine, they had their final game of the season as they played each other. Merchant Marine won.
They did, Denny. You know, Merchant Marine has really had a very good season, 7-2, and they will have one other game, whereas Coast Guard finished their season against Merchant Marine, and Coast Guard had a good season as well, but 7-2 for Merchant Marine, 5-5 overall for Coast Guard Academy. And Merchant Marine Academy was able to just take care of business against their long-term rivals, 39-26. So congratulations to Merchant Marine, having a great season. And Coast Guard didn't have a bad season. 5-5 is nothing to hang your head about, and they'll be back next year.
Indeed. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. We're talking Service Academy football. This week, Army versus Coastal Carolina, and Navy hosts East Carolina. So there'll be some Carolina games.
Yes, Denny, there certainly will be. And I tell you what, both of those games are ones that we expect Army and Navy to prevail in. You know, Coastal Carolina has a first-year head coach. Actually, they moved to 7-3 on the season, so they're putting it together pretty well. But again, Army is hitting their stride right now, and you can't bet against the Black Knights.
I agree. And Air Force will be at UNLV. That should be a fun game.
Ooh, and it does not get any easier for the Falcons, Denny, as going against UNLV. UNLV is really putting together a very solid season. They're 8-2 on the season. They're first in the Mountain West Conference right now, with only one loss in the conference to Fresno State. Remember, Air Force only has one conference loss. So if they can kind of get it together, perhaps Larrier can get healthy, it will help them really get back in the win column.
Indeed. And as we just said, Coast Guard and Merchant Marine have finished their seasons. Mission accomplished.
Well, Denny, let me just say, Merchant Marine does have one game left against Washington and Jefferson.
Ooh, I missed that.
They do have that one, and so we'll say good luck to Merchant Marine on that one, but Coast Guard season has it.
Quentin, thank you. This is fun doing. We got to keep doing it. We need our service academies to get into some bowl games so we can keep this up for an extra month.
Hey, I agree, Denny. And Air Force, we know, has already clinched a bowl. They're bowl eligible. Army has to win their next two. And if they do, not only will they go to a bowl, but they will clinch the Commander-in-Chief's trophy.
Indeed. And I'll be cheering for that. Thank you, Quentin. We'll be back at it again next week, bro.
All right, Denny. I'm looking forward to it.
Coming next on Front Lines of Freedom, General Chris Petty will review the Battle of the Month. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And now it's time for the battle of the month. So, of course, joining us is General Chris Petty. Welcome back, bro. Glad you came up with another great battle.
Well, it's always my pleasure, Danny. Great to be with you.
Okay, the battle for this month is Civil War, not a surprise. The Battle of Fredericksburg. And I need to tell the one thing I know about Fredericksburg. It was a disaster for the Union. The general was General Burnside, but he did leave a legacy for not just the Union Army, but for the whole United States of America, because the way he wore his facial hair is now called by all the rest of us sideburns, named after General Burnside. Other than that, I knew he was very ineffective. I'm sure he was a fine person. A very ineffective general. Was I right so far, Chris?
You are absolutely correct. That is his gift to history, because it certainly wasn't generalship.
Well, you should be doing for something. Okay, take us there, bro.
Okay, so Fredericksburg. Everyone's heard of it. It's not well studied because it wasn't really a decisive battle in the Civil War, but it happened in December. I usually try to align the battle with the months, but in this case, we're close. So December 11th through the 14th of 1862. This is Major General Ambrose Burnside versus Robert E. Lee. Now, keep in mind that at this point in the Western theater, Grant is now starting to work on the big puzzle of Vicksburg. So there's always different things going on in this war in the two theaters. Now, why should we know about this battle? I'm a bit of a historian, as you know, sort of an amateur, but I think this is an example of the biggest and costliest blunder of the Civil War by a general officer. This is, as I'll talk about it, just costly frontal assaults into prepared defensive positions uphill, supported by artillery. It just makes you shudder as a military person that Burnside would do this. So that's number one. Number two, it kind of represented a low point for the Lincoln administration because it was such a disaster. And number three, it's really a brilliant contrast in leadership between Robert E. Lee, who's quite an effective tactical general, not necessarily a strategic general, but a very good tactical general, and Burnside, who is really hesitant and cautious and plodding. And so that's the three reasons I like this battle. Here's the quick summary. So after the success of Antietam, which everyone's heard of, in September, so you're only a couple months prior, Lincoln replaces George McClellan for failing to follow up because he didn't do anything after he repulsed Lee's initial attack north.
Yep.
So Burnside reluctantly takes command, saying he's not qualified to lead an army. Boy, was he right. But he proposes a plan to Lincoln for swift action. Lee's army's divided. He's got Longstreet up in the Shenandoah, and he's got Jackson down covering sort of a main approach that would be normal for going to Richmond. So he says, okay, I'm going to cross the Rappahannock River. I'm going to attack Fredericksburg and open a path to Richmond. So Lincoln likes his offensive spirit, approves his plan on the 14th of November, and he orders his pontoon bridges to cross the river because he needs them for the assault. So that's how we set the stage. You with me so far?
Yep.
Okay. So he moves his first division, his what he calls Grand Division, and they're in position across from Fredericksburg on the 17th of November. So he's caught Lee really out of position here. Stonewall Jackson is up in the Shenandoah Valley, so he's almost 200 miles away. So at this point, Burnside has 500 Confederates defending the town against an entire Union army, essentially. But instead of fording the river to attack, the cautious Burnside waits for his bridges. 2 days on the river, and he can't cross. So now he's got Longstreet's corps starting to arrive, and by the 20th, Burnside's entire army's in position, still greatly outnumbering Longstreet, but he doesn't have any bridges. This is a, for want of a bridge, a battle was lost story. So there's a lot of story on the bureaucratic missteps and bad weather and delays in steamship transports that prevent the bridges from arriving. They don't arrive till the 25th. So it's 8 days after Burnside's army's in place. So he's lost all element of surprise. Lee is now consolidating his army, and by the 30th, Lee's at full strength in good defensive terrain on the high ground above Fredericksburg. So Burnside still waits. He's contemplating maybe he can envelop him and cross the river somewhere else. But anyway, he basically decides he's going to attack anyway with his original plan. He pushes his pontoon bridges out in the river on the 11th. There's lots of stories of, you know, the snipers and all that stuff. It's not easy. But by the next morning, Union troops hold the town of Fredericksburg. But Lee's had time to dig in. He's on the high ground. You've probably, a lot of your listeners have heard of Mary's Heights, kind of the famous terrain west of town. So now the rest of the battle is just Lee feeding forces into this uphill assault. And he ends up, I mean, it's like suicidal. He ends up feeding 15 Union brigades against Mary's Heights, and they just get chewed up. It's just a disaster. And this guy doesn't think about adjusting his plan with the bridges not showing up, doesn't really think about a big envelopment. He just feeds Union troops uphill, getting chewed up one brigade by another brigade. It's a predictable and avoidable disaster. Even though Burnside has, you know, 120,000 soldiers to Lee's 78,000, he loses the battle miserably. And he ends up calling a truce on the 14th just to collect his dead. And then the Union forces slip back across the river on the 15th of December. Both sides are exactly where they started. Now, after 12,600 Union casualties and 5,300 Confederate casualties. So, I mean, it's just a classic example of brave soldiers being led by a terrible, incompetent general, creating huge casualties. It's just a, it's a real case study in that.
It is. And it's not the only time in history that we've seen poor generals, but it's certainly probably the best example in our Civil War, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, I mean, personally, I think this is the best example of just terrible generalship leading brave soldiers to their deaths. Just, you know, can you imagine feeding brigade after brigade uphill in open terrain against dug-in enemy with artillery support?
I wouldn't want to do that.
No.
And I wouldn't want to have been in one of those brigades either.
No. And you got Robert E. Lee, I mean, just watching the slaughter, and it's the origin of his famous remark as he's perched in his command post, kind of on the high terrain, looking at everything, going, you know, he says something like, "It is well that war is so terrible, or we would grow too fond of it." That's how bad the battle was for Burnside. Lee's sitting there enjoying the show, saying, "Wow, we're just slaughtering these people." So yeah, that gives you an idea how bad it was. And Burnside just wasn't nimble mentally, wasn't flexible. He just plodded forward with this silly straight on assault. And it was a disaster.
That's a gentle way of putting it. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. We're talking with General Chris Petty. And Chris, before I let you go, I want you again to talk about Battle Digest. It contains such great information. It's a good option for folks who just want to learn more about our nation's battles. the easy way, because it's short, sweet, and to the point.
Yeah, these are. I mean, if you like these stories and you want to learn more without having to read the 300-page books, that's what I do. So just go to battledigest.com, battledigest.com, and you'll find these summaries, these beautiful, trifold, glossy brochures, basically, and they summarize these battles. You can be a genius on warfare in no time. It takes about 30 minutes to read and understand the entire battle, with even the good subplots and stuff. So battledigest.com, I hope your listeners will check it out.
I certainly encourage everybody to do that, battledigest.com. Thank you, Chris, for your great review of that horrible but real history.
Burnside's blunder.
And thanks for being a member of the Frontlines of Freedom team. I'm glad we worked together.
Thanks, Denny. I always appreciate it. I will look forward to speaking with you next month.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 64 this time? I want you, Ranger, ready. Then stand at ease.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S.-only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com, use your promo code FREEDOM, and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I really welcome your comments. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Marine vet Harold is horrified that many people in the country that he fought to defend are rallying in favor of terrorists, people who attack, target, and kill or take hostages of civilians and follow no rules of mercy or dignity. What is wrong here?
Harold, I'm asking the same questions. We know that, for the most part, our schools and colleges are not teaching our nation's history or values. We need to get active in our communities and our nation before we lose everything.
And Army Mom Shelley really enjoys hearing the Marine B&B. It's fun and informative.
Thanks, Shelley. It's fun working with these two characters. They're good friends. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 22 November 1783, John Hanson, the first president of the Continental Congress under the Articles of Confederation, died in his home state of Maryland. Hanson is sometimes called the first president of the United States, but this is a misnomer, since the presidency did not exist as an executive position separate from Congress until the federal Constitution created the role upon its ratification in 1789.
Indeed. And on the 24th of November, 1863, during the Civil War, Union troops captured Lookout Mountain, southwest of Chattanooga, as they began to break the Confederate siege of that city. In the Battle Above the Clouds, it's really high ground there, the Yankees scaled the slopes of the mountain on the periphery of the Chattanooga lines.
And legend holds that on 21 November, 1864, during the Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln wrote a letter to Lydia Bixby, a widow and mother of five men who had been killed in the Civil War. A copy of the letter was then published in the Boston Evening Transcript on 25 November and signed Abraham Lincoln. The original letter has never been found. The letter expressed condolences to Mrs. Bixby on the death of her five sons who had fought to preserve the Union in the Civil War. The author regretted how weak and fruitless must be any words of mine which should attempt to beguile you from the grief of a loss so overwhelming. He continued with a prayer that our Heavenly Father may assuage the anguish of your bereavement and leave you the cherished memory of the loved and lost, and the solemn pride that must be yours to have laid so costly a sacrifice on the altar of freedom.
That does sound like Lincoln. And on the 22nd of November, 1942, during World War II, a Soviet counteroffensive against the German armies paid off as the Red Army trapped about 250,000 German soldiers south of Kalach on the Don River within Stalingrad. As the Soviet circle tightened, German General Friedrich Paulus requested permission from Berlin to withdraw. It was denied.
And on 24 November 1944, during World War II, 111 U.S. B-29 Superfortress bombers raided Tokyo for the first time since Captain Jimmy Doolittle's raid in 1942. Their target? The Nakajima Aircraft Engine Works. Fall 1944 saw the sustained strategic bombing of Japan. It began with a reconnaissance flight over Tokyo by Tokyo Rose, a Superfortress B-29 bomber piloted by Captain Ralph Stakely, who grabbed over 700 photographs of the bomb sites in 35 minutes. Next, starting the first week of November, came a string of B-29 raids, dropping hundreds of tons of high explosives on Iwo Jima in order to keep the Japanese fighters stationed there on the ground and useless for a counteroffensive. Then came Tokyo. The awesome raid, composed of 111 Superfortress four-engine bombers, was led by General Emmett Rosie O'Donnell, piloting Dauntless Dottie. Press cameramen on site captured the takeoffs of the first mass raid on the Japanese capital ever for posterity. Unfortunately, even with the use of radar, overcast skies and bad weather proved an insurmountable obstacle at 30,000 feet. Despite the barrage of bombs that were dropped, fewer than 50 hit the main target, the Nakajima Aircraft Works, doing little damage. The upside was that at such a great height, B-29s were protected from counterattack. Only one was shot down.
That's quite a story. And on the 22nd of November, 1963, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the 35th President of the United States, was assassinated while traveling through Dallas, Texas, in an open-top convertible. First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy rarely accompanied her husband on political outings, but she was beside him, along with Texas Governor John Connally and his wife, for a 10-mile motorcade through the streets of downtown Dallas. Sitting in a Lincoln convertible, the Kennedys and Connallys waved at the large, enthusiastic crowds gathered at the parade route as their vehicle passed the Texas School Book Depository Building at 12:30 p.m., Lee Harvey Oswald fired three shots from the sixth floor, fatally wounding President Kennedy and seriously wounding Governor Connally. Kennedy was pronounced dead 30 minutes later at Dallas's Parkland Hospital. He was 46.
And on 23 November 1981, President Ronald Reagan signed off on a top-secret document, a National Security Decision Directive, which gave the Central Intelligence Agency the power to recruit and support a 500-man force of Nicaraguan rebels to conduct covert actions against the leftist Sandinista regime in Nicaragua. A budget of $19 million was established for that purpose. This marked the beginning of official U.S. support for the so-called Contras in their struggle against the Sandinistas.
And on the 22nd of November, 1988, in the presence of members of Congress and the media, the Northrop B-2 stealth bomber was shown publicly for the first time at Air Force Plant 42 in Palmdale, California. The aircraft, which was developed in great secrecy for nearly a decade, was designed with stealth characteristics that would allow it to penetrate the enemy's most sophisticated defenses unnoticed. At the time of its public unveiling, the B-2 had not even flown on a test flight. It rapidly came under fire for its massive cost, over $40 billion for development, and $1 billion price tag for each unit. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
This is outrageous. A confused elderly man drove through an anti-Israel protest in Minneapolis, Minnesota on Sunday evening after a group blocked off the streets near Loring Park, with Minneapolis City Council candidate Zach Metker filming the mob attacking the man and instructing his followers to hunt him down. Metzger held the camera up to the man's car, showing the man in distress and crying in his vehicle. As the mob surrounded him, and one person jumped and kicked his window. The elderly man tried to drive around the attackers and eventually was able to escape the mob. The police never arrived on scene, as they were instructed to stay clear of the area.
Thanks, Colonel. Seems like we keep hearing this same story over and over again for the past 5 years as protesters become violent and try to hurt innocent people who are caught in their grip. This man had been out buying groceries and stumbled into the protest and was violently attacked as people shouted out, "Hunt him down, shoot him." Folks, this is going to keep happening as the far left in our country take control and go crazy. To the innocent people caught on the road, it doesn't matter what the politics are or what these people are protesting for or against. All the old man knew was that people were trying to hurt him and kill him. Since this is still happening around the country and appears to be escalating, here are some tips you can follow to minimize the chance of getting caught in a riot or a violent protest. First, stay out of the downtown areas of our largest cities. They are run by far-left ideologues who will not protect you. This is where most of the violence is happening. Always stay out of the downtown areas, especially at night. Second, if you have to visit downtown, then listen to the local news first. If an event is planned, then don't go there. Find a different travel route. Just stay away. That's your safest bet. And finally, just because an attack is politically motivated, it doesn't mean you lose your right to self-defense. But here's the thing. In these far-left jurisdictions, the justice system is headed by unjust people. And even if you successfully use a gun or your car to escape, you may be brought up on criminal charges. That's why I always carry an up-to-date premium legal insurance policy just in case I have to use force to save my life during a riot. But again, the best course of action is to not be caught in this scenario in the first place. Avoid downtown like the plague, especially during times of social unrest. Frontlines of Freedom salutes this elderly citizen for keeping a clear head and escaping physical injury, and we wish him all the best as he recovers emotionally from this traumatic experience.
Amen. Our movie of the month is The 11th Order. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments on the movie. Send your comments to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, General Arnold Panero will discuss some of our nation's major problems. West Point grad Dr. John Hughes will discuss the MacArthur Society of West Point grads who are seeking a values change there. Quentin Roberts will review this week's Service Academy football games, and Diane Raver will discuss the movie of the month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase this book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. I encourage you to plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafreedom.com. That's cvafreedom.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.